Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, anyone in between, and all those still trying to figure it the fuck out, please sit back, relax, put in your earphones, and buckle your seatbelts. The next 2 hours are guaranteed to not be safe for work. Now welcome to your speakers, smartphones, or laptop, America's sweetheart, Pollo Del Mar, and San Francisco's Blasian beauty, Pearl Tees. It's time for Podomatic's number one ranked LGBT podcast, and 120 minutes of your life you will never get back. Brought to you in conjunction with San Francisco's Left Magazine, it's time for Party Foul Radio with Pollo and Pearl.
Hello again, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Party Foul Radio. I'm your co-host, Miss Pollo Del Mar.
And I'm Pearl Tees.
And guess what, boys and girls, ladies and gentlemen, everyone in between, we have with us the new current reigning Miss International Premier.
Miss Premier International.
That's what I said.
I won, you guys. I went out to Seattle and I won that pageant. It was so amazing. But on top of that, we'll talk more about that later, I'm sure. But on top of that, we also became number 6 on Podomatic's top shows this week.
Yes.
All thanks to you guys.
Absolutely. Thanks to you guys. And I have to say, thanks to Dustin Lance Black. Because we had, 2 episodes ago, we had Dustin Lance Black on. You guys know him as the Oscar-winning screenwriter of Milk, as well as the screenwriter and director of When We Rise on ABC recently. And as a result of that interview, he posted links to the articles on Huffington Post on his fan page, and thousands of you, 9,000 plus people, listened to our episode last week. And I'm sure that there's, you know, I think about, like, in the grand scheme of things, you know, like, RuPaul probably gets, like, 9,000 listens a minute or some shit.
Right.
To her podcast. But we are not RuPaul. We are not Michelle Visage. But we are Party Foul Radio. And because of you, we were number 6 on Podomatic's top 10 talk shows in the world. So, thank you for all of that.
Yes.
Now, Pearl, I need to know all of the things. You guys, I have not talked to Pearl, really. She was gone all weekend. I did send her texts, like, wishing her well and congratulating her.
My phone, girl, was off the hook this weekend. I left on Friday. We drove up to Seattle. It was like a 14, 15-hour fucking drive, girl. It was not a game. But big thanks to my best friend, V. She drove the entire way up there.
Aww.
And then we split the ride back. And now the reason we drove instead of got plane tickets is because when I went to buy the tickets, I was purchasing tickets for 2, and the price that they showed for a round-trip ticket was the price for 1 person, and I assumed it was the price of 2 tickets. So when I was ready to purchase them, it was not what I thought it was going to be, and my dresser was like, well, why don't we just drive up? So it seemed like a great idea. It was a good idea. It was a nice little drive, but girl, it wore me out.
Well, the drive is a lot. You know what? If you go up there again, maybe consider taking Amtrak. And
I didn't even know Amtrak goes up there.
The reason I say that is because a couple years ago when I went, or last year sometime when I went up to Portland, they're paying for it, and they'd have paid for the plane ticket and everything. But I decided it would be like a nice little getaway because it's a really scenic. I mean,
it's beautiful,
girl.
Beautiful.
Like the drama of the drive aside, the right. Beauty that you pass is real. Okay.
It is.
So, but I got a ticket on Amtrak to Portland from Oakland to Portland. I think it was like $140 or something like that. Now that was just one way, but it was super beautiful and it was sort of chill and relaxed. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you can hustle through but it's 15 hours each way, right? Or 14 it's, hours each way?
It's, I think,
to drive
13 to 15 depending on.
Okay, so the trip on the train was something like 12 or 13, but you're not doing anything. You're just relaxing and chilling, and it's beautiful, and you can sleep. And I upgraded on the Amtrak to, like, the business class, and there was, like, 5 of us in the whole car.
Oh, nice.
Girl, you can get really cheap on the coach, but, bitch, you're, like, laid up.
How much did you spend?
I think it was, I think it was maybe $30 extra to upgrade. So I think it was about $150 or $140 one way for that.
One way.
Okay. One way. I mean, it's still, if you you know, if you plan out in advance, you can fly up to Seattle for like $80 or $90.
But you know what? Like $300 for a round trip ticket is probably about as much as I spent with the rental car and gas.
Right.
So I mean, it's probably.
But that's just for one person. You got three of you up there for that price.
That's four of us.
Oh, okay. Well, four still. You know, but I don't know. Sometimes you have to consider. I guess if you're taking a whole crew and you can drive, girl, do it.
Yeah.
Drive in shifts, but good for you, B. Good on you for driving all the way up there, bitch. Right. That's exhausting, honey.
Right.
But so.
So we get there.
Right. Okay, you get there.
We get there on. At 1:30 in the morning, we leave Friday, and we got there like at 1:30 in the morning on Saturday.
Right, and they left at like 10 a.m., you guys.
We did. And then, that evening, I had an interview.
On Saturday?
Yes.
Okay, cool. So you did get some sleep and da-da-da-da-da.
Yeah, and it was great. So the way it was set up, you go in for an interview at one place. I'm at one of their local gay bars, which is one of the nicer gay bars there, called Our Place.
I was getting ready to ask if it was Our Place. Our Place, you guys, is the home bar of Robbie Turner from RuPaul's Drag Race. Mm-hmm. So,
And they have three judges. And the judges there were judges that usually that work in that pageant system.
Okay.
And then the next day they had five judges, one of them being the same, but these people were all people that knew how to judge pageants.
Okay.
Which is nice because, you know, like being like in the pageant scene, it's so easy for a pageant to be rigged. Something like this would make it very difficult to do.
Yeah, I have to say that there have been certain places where I don't think that the pageants were necessarily. I'll use the UPP pageant, the Universal Panache pageant that I went to in Hawaii. Like, I don't think it was rigged, but if it was, it would probably have been very easy because they had judges who were locals and whatever. So you definitely know that some girls got a home field advantage. And like, I remember in the pageant that Landa won, my drag mother won the pageant year before that I competed. And, like, one of the judges was, like, a popular barista at the local Starbucks. No lie.
Oh, wow.
So, girl, whatever. But, you know, it's like, hey, Betty, I know that, like, right. I want this girl to, like, you know, so pay her, whatever. I don't think that was the case. I felt very fairly judged there. But it's nice when you have judges that are legit and unbiased.
Right.
And you kind of know that in advance.
So, the next day was the pageant. Sunday was the pageant, which was held at Jet City Improv out there. It was one of their theaters. It was really nice. It was a cute little venue. And so, the categories, besides interview, there was presentation, which
That's kind of evening gown?
It's kind of like your choice, I think. But I wore, like, a gown. And it has to be aqua and white.
Okay, aqua and white.
And then there's swimsuit.
They have swimsuit?
They have swimsuit.
Come through, swimsuit.
Yeah, girls, my first pageant modeling swimsuit. It was amazing. I lived. And then after swimsuit is evening and gown, question and answer, and then talent. And I believe I won all categories except question and answer. But I'm not sure, so don't quote me on that. I know I won talent. I know I won an interview.
So how many girls competed?
There was two of us.
Okay.
And we were both the first trans women to compete. Yeah.
So either way, they were going to be making history. Well, cool.
The other girl was gorgeous. Her name is Sapphire. She's from Florida. And I swear, if you were to put like our like reputation side by side, I mean, I could keep up with her, but she probably should have beat me. If you put our reputation, but girl, my package was sickening. Sorry, girl. I had to come with it. It was great. They kept saying it was like neck and neck. I had a blast. Such an experience. I can't wait to go out there again. They're going to fly me back out to perform for, I believe it's Miss Northwest Fierce, which is a pageant out there.
So you're going to compete in that, or are you just performing?
No, I'm performing.
I was like, Jesus.
Yeah.
She's become that bitch. She's like, I won this, so in 2 months I'm going to be doing blah, 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 and this. Girl, because that's a thing, you guys. That is a real thing. Bitches be like, oh, you know, the dust, right. they're still pinning the crown in, and they're already, like, sending, they're, like, on their phone sending the application for the next pageant.
Right.
Honey.
And I totally get it, because with this pageant, they offer to help pay, I think, we'll find this out later, it's a grand, I'm not sure, they'll pay for a gown for your national package.
Well, that's fierce.
If you decide to do a national pageant.
So, you guys, it's very possible that they will be paying for Pearl to go off to Miss Gay United States. She is qualified.
I am qualified for that already. Yes.
Pearl rolled her eyes, you guys.
I didn't roll my eyes. I took a deep breath. I still haven't decided if that's, I'm in debate whether or not I want to fly out there to do the pageant.
Okay. Fair enough.
We'll see. But there are so many other pageants that I am possibly thinking about.
Girls, I'm going to have to fucking do some kind of a pageant just so I can feel worthy sitting next to her. You know, honest to God, so you guys, locally we have a competition called Miss Gay San Francisco.
I'm thinking about doing it.
Really? Are you?
Yes.
No, I think you should do my pageant. I think you should do the gold pageant.
I did that and I won Miss Congeniality a few years ago.
Okay, so this is the thing, you guys. Miss Gay San Francisco sounds like a real thing. It's not a big thing
yeah,
locally.
Just because there's no like real prize package.
It comes and goes and whatever and it whatever. But the thing was, I had considered doing it again for two reasons. Like, I did it 10 years ago and I came in first runner up to Mercedes Monroe, and who is now our current reigning empress and who went on to win Miss Gay United States and do all this stuff. And so coming in second place to her there's no shame in that. But I'm the kind of person who likes to do things and complete what I start.
Right, right.
And so I was like, okay. And the other, so that's one reason I considered doing it. The other reason I had contemplated doing it is because my drag grandma, Nikki Starr, is the only person in San Francisco history to have been Miss Gay San Francisco and Miss Tranny Shack. Well, I won Miss Tranny Shack, and Nikki had always said, like, you know, like, talked about us being, me being her granddaughter as a result of that. And I really embraced that concept. Mm-hmm. And she has passed away. She passed away last year. And I contemplated the idea of doing the Miss Gay San Francisco thing to complete what I started and to kind of honor Nikki in that regard. Because Nikki got the shaft, bitch, when she was Miss Gay San Francisco. They treated her real, real bad.
Right.
And, but the way the systems are set up here, you guys, the Miss Gay San Francisco title falls underneath one of the court systems, and it's like a secondary title. Well, I've already been the Grand Duchess of the other court system, which is the highest title in that system. And for me, it would be a step back. People would look at it as a step back. I don't give a fuck, because I don't care. I don't pay two minds to any of that shit.
Yeah.
But I do think that for a lot of people, they would be surprised that I would do, if I were to do that.
I mean, girl, I think if you want to do it, you should do it.
The reality here in San Francisco is there ain't that many competitions that you can participate.
And you know what? This is why this is my second crown in Seattle.
Right.
Two states up, girl, because we don't have nothing out here.
So it was one of those things where I was like, yeah, I could do this. I mean,
but your pageant is part of the system also.
Our pageant is part of the system, but we are only we're really, really loosely associated with the system. Our pageant is one where we consider it a standalone fundraising title, which is associated with, but girl, we don't nag and harp and bemoan the fact that people don't show up for this or that or whatever.
Right.
You know, the one thing I will say is, if, let's say, in, like, some random universe, I decided to do this Miss Gay San Francisco thing, which I have considered but not given a great deal of thought to, it would be kind of cool, because with Mercedes as Empress, I would be working with her, and it would be sort of like, it's a step up, certainly, a step in the right direction, working with her versus, let's just say, some of the people that I've seen hold that position in the past, where I'm like, I don't want to second fiddle to XYZ individual.
That's true. It's very
because,
true.
You know, Mercedes brings a degree of credibility and to that position that I haven't seen or felt has been there for a while. So, I don't mean to be shady to other people, but I feel like Mercedes has been like a sister, because she was one of the people I met when I first started doing drag. And I look with respect to the things that she has accomplished and would like to kind of pattern some of the things that I would accomplish after that. So it makes it a little more credible path than if I see some hag, you know, or whatever, in a position and I'm like, I'm second to this. No.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, I mean.
Whatever. But, you know, whatever. It is what it is. I also have to say that in some ways, like, I think other people would look at the current Miss Gay San Francisco and be like, she's not inspiring or whatever.
Right.
Like, you know, because, but at the same time, I look at her and say that I judged this pageant last year when she won, and I was inspired by her story because she wants to go out and represent what life can be like in San Francisco. And if you think of the title as like, this is what life could be like in San Francisco, being Miss Gay San Francisco could be great. I mean, B.B. Sweetbriar has been Miss Gay San Francisco. Yeah. Mercedes Monroe was Miss Gay San Francisco. Nikki Starr was Miss Gay San Francisco.
Kipper Snacks
was... Oh, I forgot that Kipper was Miss Gay San Francisco.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's a lot of people who've held that position that I love and adore. So, why... You know, it's a... Most people look at it as a stepping... Like a beginner's stepping stone type of position. But I just look at it as like... Another thing on my fucking resume.
I heard that.
So,
right.
Anyway,
so, which is why I was like, huh, maybe.
Our pageant, you ho! Like, you guys, my pageant has been. This will be our, I want to say, our ninth year.
Uh huh.
And we've had some incredible people throughout the history of it win, but the problem that we've seen is that a lot of girls consider it like. Like I was just saying about the Miss Gay San Francisco, they see it as like their first pageant or whatever. Mm-hmm. And since there's not a lot of pageants, girls want to do a pageant. They try it. If they don't win, then they never come back. And I'm like, going back to what I was saying earlier, I'm the type who's like, I started something. I learned from it. I'm going to come back fiercer the second time.
Yeah.
So I would love it. You know, like I think that I look at people like Alina Milletti, who won it, and she has been all kinds of things.
She won it the year I competed, yeah.
You know, we get people like, who've competed, you know, Angie Maima.
Angie, she was like the first one, wasn't she?
She was the first one, and she had come off winning Star Search. So she won Star Search and then won our pageant, like, the following year.
When is your pageant?
It's going to be July 22nd at the cafe. So, you're very familiar with the venue.
Yeah.
And
that's real.
Okay, you guys, you don't even know the drama that's been happening here. We were just chattering along. All of a sudden, everything froze up. Lost.
Yes.
We had to pray. We found it. But we wasted so much time. It's now time to go to our first guest.
So, we'll get back to you with that.
Get back. By the time you hear this, we'll have probably already gone back and put it in, but... Anyway, drama. Okay. It is now time for us to bring on our first guest. Whew, she is a legend, you guys. I'm calling her right now. She is a legend. Calling. Both in the drag world as well as the pornography world, honey. She recently just performed, she's also an incredibly well-known international DJ. She performed down... at Sydney Mardi Gras, girl. She and Swiss Navy took her down there with her and Roma.
Hi,
Eddie. Hi, Shishi.
Hi, Eddie.
So, everybody, it's Shishi LaRue.
Hey, Shishi.
Hi.
So, I was just telling them...
Are we on, girl?
We're on. I gotta make sure that you're able to be heard, but... So... I should have FaceTimed you. It would have been so exciting. Anyway.
FaceTime me.
Okay, cool. I'll FaceTime.
Girl, you don't even have to hang up. Just press FaceTime.
FaceTime. Okay, cool.
Girl, Poyo is so old. She doesn't know.
That's the truth. I'm old.
Look, she's trying to hold up her phone. That's not how it's going to work.
Oh, hola! I'm here with my girl, Pearl Tease. So, where are you right now? I know you're a two-hour time difference.
I'm in Minnesota in my little... warehouse apartment.
Come on, warehouse apartment.
That place looks fierce, girl.
Yeah, thanks. I love it here. It's, you know, it's like living in a hotel. It's pretty great. I don't miss West Hollywood at all. I mean, I like going there, but I'm glad that I can leave.
So, did you give up that amazing place that I visited you at in West Hollywood?
I did.
Oh.
I lived there for 15 years.
I loved that place.
Yeah, it was good, but it had a lot of bad drinking memories.
Yeah, just a lot of bad memories associated with it.
It just really wasn't, it wasn't fun to be in anymore. I did a lot of drinking and a lot of drugs and a lot of things that I would never even give up, ever give up.
Of course.
You know, really fun times, lots of boys, lots of parties, lots of drag, lots of, you know, late nights into early mornings until later that day.
Oh, honey. Like, if you were like me, girl, it was like late nights into early mornings into late nights into early mornings until 3 weeks later.
Oh, my goodness. Well, unfortunately, I have to, I, no matter how many drugs I did, which it was cocaine, mine, I had to sleep. It's weird. Yeah, I could never do the two-day stay-up thing. Never. It was, thank God, I mean, knock on wood and God bless for that.
So what is drag like where you're at now versus Hollywood?
You know what? Minnesota is huge drag. Huge. Mm-hmm. They have a huge drag community. There's an amazing drag queen here named Nina D'Angelo that is like, she's a pageant queen, but she's also this amazing performer. She's Barbra Streisand, and she does Shaker. And she does Lady Gaga, and she's just really, she can sew, and she's amazing. I don't know why she hasn't been on Drag Race. But you know, the very first Drag Race winner was from here.
Yeah, BB. BB lives there now. BB Saharabaneh lives back there now, right?
Yes, she does. And I actually brought Rue to the Gay 90s, where she saw BB for the first time.
Wow.
Yeah. So, I feel like I had a part in that.
Right? So you and Rue go back a long way, right, RuPaul?
We do. It's like 30 years.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
Obviously, you were an embryo.
I was doing a thing in West Hollywood at this little club called the Four Star, which is now Mickey's. And I used to do host this contest called Drag Race.
Really?
Yes.
Oh.
It was called Drag Race, and she entered, and she won. She sang Star Booty.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's pretty incredible.
Pretty crazy. Pretty crazy how, you know, how weird life is.
Uh-huh.
You know, but it's really good. We've remained friends the whole time, so I think she's awesome.
So you and Roma and Ellen Friedman and some boys all went down to Gay Mardi Gras in Sydney. So tell us about that.
We did. Oh, my God. You know, I've been to Sydney before. I've shot some movies in Sydney, and I've gone down there. I've been to Melbourne, but I've never been to Mardi Gras.
Okay.
And all the drag, you know, drag is so fierce in Australia.
Uh-huh.
God, really? They love their drag down there. I mean, they use drag in TV commercials. There's drag queen, you know, makeup on QVC. You know, they embrace drag.
That's incredible.
And this was my first year going to Mardi Gras, and it was pretty overwhelming. And, you know, I got to thank Roma for that, because Roma suggested me and got me the gig and suggested I go. I didn't want to go because I didn't want to take that freaking flight.
It's like, what, 18 hours?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Girl, yeah. Hello. Yeah. It's quite, ugh.
I had first class there. And a cocky on the way back.
Oh my god.
Huge difference between first class and economy on an 18-hour flight, girl.
Yeah.
Oh.
But, you know, I watched about 7 movies and fell asleep. I got to see Jack, finally. But
so what was it like being part of their Mardi Gras?
What was what, honey? I'm sorry.
What was it like being part of it?
The Mardi Gras.
I DJed at a bar called the Midnight Shift,
mm-hmm.
which I knew before in my our path across before in Sydney. Of course, that was, you know, I was drinking a lot, and I fucked some guy in a broom closet there.
Fucked him in a broom closet?
Yes, me and a porn star named Spike took this guy into the broom closet of the bar and sucked him off. It was so weird. I remember just being there, this amazing drag queen named Penny Tration, who was awesome, and Amelia Earhead, and just the awesome queens. But being up on that stage and DJing for, because the Midnight Shift was right at the start of the parade. So it was like the epicenter of the parade. And there were, do I dare say, millions of people there? It was like insane.
Girl, you keep cutting in and out.
Oh, am I?
Yeah, a little bit. Like, I'm hanging on your every word.
Okay, well, okay, so...
We're good. We're good.
Should we call back?
I think we're good now.
I think we're good.
Okay. So, yeah, it was amazing, and the bar was packed, and, you know, they appreciate the kind of music I play. So, you know, when I put on ABBA, they start cheering.
Of course, hello.
Yeah, or Kylie Minogue and you know, Steps, and just this great music that I like to play that America doesn't get.
Yeah, well, yeah.
So, but it was really great. It was an awesome night. Yeah, and I DJ'd with we did this thing with this DJ named Feminem.
Feminem, yeah.
And we did like a drag queen battle DJ where she would play a song and then I would play a song and then she would play a song. And what was fun was we got to, when we felt it, we would go and lip sync the song for the crowd and it was amazing.
I live.
What, you know what? One thing that's weird there is they do not tip the drag queen.
No. I had a girl in my show this past Sunday night from Brazil and her whole thing was she did not care about what she was getting paid. She wanted the American experience of getting tipped by the crowd. And that was her whole... She was, like, so overwhelmed. She was like, oh, my God, at home, they perform, and the crowd goes crazy for them, but nobody tips because it's not part of the culture. And she... They, of course, everything is about American culture outside of the U.S., and they were, like, they see that the girls get tipped, and they wanted that... She wanted that experience.
Well, there's no tipping the waiter or cab drivers... Or anything. So, yeah, they don't tip the drag queens. And the drag queens are freaking go out of their mind when they're performing.
Wow.
And these elaborate costumes and these elaborate numbers, and they don't get tipped, but the crowds really appreciate them.
Well, I think that they get paid a greater base pay probably than we get here.
Probably.
One would hope. Jesus. So.
Let's hope.
Yeah, because I know what I paid that poor girl from Brazil. Good thing you got tipped, bitch.
Then you made her, like, what, wash your clothes or something?
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Right. Sounds about right.
So,
yeah,
we all know that you kind of, like, rose to national prominence, international prominence, and infamy, honestly, in the adult film industry for the gay porn.
Yeah, yeah.
And I know that you still are heavily involved in that, but you travel so much DJing. How... Like, what is the balance between DJ and porn and your real life?
I'll give you just my upcoming schedule.
Okay.
But tomorrow I go to Austin, Texas to DJ at Oil Can here.
Okay.
Then I come home for a week to Minnesota. And then I go to Madison, Wisconsin with this drag queen named Harmony Breeze. And I do a show in Madison that I DJ on Saturday. And two porn stars are coming. Taylor Rain and Brendan Patrick.
Okay.
And then I come back here for a couple days, and then I go to Edmonton, Canada to do this three-night gig there. I DJ, do a drag show, and they're having an award show. And I'm part of that. And then I go right from there and go right to Los Angeles and shoot a movie for men.com.
Wow. Okay.
So, yeah, but you know what? I like to work, Boyle. I like to work.
Of course.
Yeah, I like to work.
Well, I'm sure I'm in that industry, girl.
Well, I mean, I don't think... I think that what I'm hearing... You know, she's like, of course, in the porn industry, you like to work. But what I'm hearing is the same thing when people ask me, for example, like, you know, how have you been? And I say, it's crazy hectic. But it's always better to be crazy hectic than have nobody want you. Because I've had a history where I made myself persona non grata.
And yeah.
So to not be that anymore makes me feel good.
Well, I don't like to lay idle.
Right.
You know, idle hands is the devil's workshop, as they say.
Yeah.
But, you know, I just like to work. I like to keep going. You know, sometimes my body doesn't want me to. Sometimes it says, lay down, bitch. But, you know, but I'm blessed and I'm grateful for being able to, you know, I fucked up a lot when I was drinking. Especially like this gig I'm doing this weekend at Oil and Harry's. Oh God, I had done some demoralizing shit at that club. And they still want me back, which is pretty freaking lucky. I'm lucky. I'm a blessed fucking bitch.
Yeah, I mean, I know that you've talked about, like, you made it really public that you went to rehab for drinking.
Yeah.
I mean, so it's not, like, anything that I'm telling a secret, but
no.
You made that really public on Facebook that you went, you had to go to rehab to try to get over some of these demons.
Yeah.
And now, like, you say that these places want you back, and what is it like for you to go back to these places where sometimes embarrassing and horrible things happen?
You know what? I talk about myself and make fun of myself and dig at myself before really anybody else can.
Mm-hmm.
And just, I'm part of the joke.
Right.
I'm part of it. You know, if you're embarrassed, you'll never do anything again. You did that shit. It's done. It's over. It's past. You can't dwell.
Yeah.
I'm hearing the crackling now.
That's just my brittle bones. As I'm aging right in front of you, Pearl will tell you.
Right. So how did you get into DJing and drag?
You know, well, let's see. I'm a director of porn, so I'm a control freak, shock. And I would go to clubs, and I would hate the music. And I would want to hear songs that I wanted to hear, and I knew that I could... I have such a huge musical repertoire. It's, you know, my music library is insane. And I've lived so many frickin' decades that I can play 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, 2000s, and above. So, you know, and I do, which is, you know, so I just started to, I did my first gig at a little bar called Foo Bar with Jackie Beat.
Of course.
All right.
Jackie kind of taught me how to push the buttons. And I did it. And it was really fun. Really fun. And the minute I got, listen, in high school, I used to play records at the gym for people. In college, I used to play records. I would bring, like, the Runaways.
Uh-huh.
You know, the Runaways, hard rock, or like punk rock.
Of course.
And I would play this, and people would be like, this is horrible. And I'd be like, it's amazing. You know, I'd be carrying around records of the Runaways and Olivia Newton-John.
Yeah.
So,
One of the things that I'm sure that you get pleasure out of this, I think that there are certain people among us who, like, always sort of have our pulse, our finger on the pulse of music, you know what I mean? And I love introducing new music that I, you know.
Me too.
So, yeah, that's great.
Yeah, I have introduced so many drag queens to so many great songs. Like, Morgan McMichaels will call me and go, girl, give me some new songs. Because I've given her some amazing songs. There's this singer named Jamelia who does this song, Beware the Dog, which is such a fun rock and roll, fierce dance drag number. Oh, it's so good. And she does that song. So, I love it. It's so great to do that. And you know what? And I found there's music that I found in my travels. I was in France once going through the bins of CDs, and I found a single of Anna Nicole Smith doing My Heart Belongs to Daddy.
Wow.
Which, it's a dance version. And I've got that, and I don't think anybody else has that.
Wow.
I remember I had her autograph it. She goes, I don't even have a copy of this.
Oh my goodness.
Holy shit.
Yeah. So, and she goes, and I never got paid for it either.
You know, she's like, she's the personality that most of my drag persona is built on. Absolutely. I just love
Audacious
her.
Tatas.
Well, yeah. Like.
Just a mess girl. You
well,
know.
No, I think, more than, you know, she's a Texas girl.
A wreck.
Like, really beautiful, who dressed up, not, you know, they fixed her up. She was a fixer-upper.
Yeah.
And that's how I've always, you know.
I think she was pretty trailer trash, and that guy from Guess saw the beauty in her and dolled her up. I mean, listen, the woman was freaking gorgeous.
Absolutely.
But I don't even know if she even knew that.
Right. Well, I mean, I suspect that she knew that she was the prettiest girl in her trailer park. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, and that's always the girl that I wanted to, I grew up. That was the girls I loved.
Have you seen her daughter? How gorgeous that daughter is?
Yeah.
Okay, daughter looks just like her, and she's stunning. And she's, she'll be, hopefully she won't get screwed up, and she'll be a model or something. But, you know who I think is just the most gorgeous?
Who?
The most gorgeous and the most fabulous? Paris Jackson.
She's the new thing. She's the new it thing.
I don't know who that is.
Michael Jackson's daughter.
Oh.
You know, the Caucasian bleach blonde.
She looks like Madonna.
Yeah, she's real. Look her up, girl.
80s Madonna. She's on the cover of Vogue looking like 80s Madonna. She is gorgeous.
Yeah.
And she's kind of butch.
Yeah.
Which I like. She's kind of got that butch.
She's got tattoos and...
Yeah, she's pretty awesome.
Yeah. So
she's like my obsession. I want her to make a record. I always want people to make records.
Right, of course. I think the new song that we're going to see a lot of breaking out at drag shows right now is...
Bounce.
You're talking about Mo Bounce?
Yeah, you hate it.
I don't hate it. I just don't like
Bounce,
the Azalea.
Bounce. It'll go out real fast. It's fun right now, but it's going to go out real fast.
I love You Don't Know Me. Featuring Ray, it's Jax Jones. You Don't Know Me.
Oh, yes.
It's like, I think we're going to see huge, it's going to be breaking out huge at drag shows. So, love it. So, you have been, like, far longer than you've been spinning records as a DJ, you've been in the gay porn industry. And there have been a lot.
30 years.
How many?
31.
Jesus, okay.
My goodness.
Longer than Pearl's been alive.
Exactly.
Wow.
Yeah.
But you know, I'm a sperm on someone's face in one of my movies, doll.
Yeah, exactly.
I would love to be. If the coin is right.
So, but there have been so many changes because my perception as an outsider from when you started, it was about the big companies like Titan and Colt and these iconic porn stars who were the cover boy of all these magazines, of the porn boxes. We don't even have that shit anymore practically.
You know, I miss magazines.
I miss magazines, and I miss actual DVD boxes where people, like that's when you knew somebody made it.
We're still making DVD boxes. I mean, I just finished probably one of the best movies I've ever done for Naked Sword called Scared Stiff, a movie that Jackie B wrote for me 13 years ago.
Wow.
I've had that fucking script in my desk, and it's a parody of, like Friday the 13th slasher movies. And it's really, really good. And it just got up for a bunch of Grabby Awards. And I'm so happy. It's just...
She said it just got up. Took 13 years to get up, but it was worth the wait.
That fucker up.
It was worth the wait.
Yes, totally.
So, I mean, how have you seen the industry change? Like, it seems like...
Drastically.
Girl, nowadays... Every bitch in San Francisco says they're a porn star. And I'm like, honey, just because you have an iPhone and a movie on XTube does not make you a porn star.
That's what it is. That's what it's kind of got to. There's really just a handful right now of boys that I would consider true bona fide stars. The Rocco Steels, the Trent Ducatis, Jimmy Durano, Ryan Rose, Colby Keller, Dean Monroe, guys like that, that are the true stars. And I just finished a movie for Falcon. I can't tell you the title. I can't tell you who's in it. I can't tell you nothing because until all the press comes out. But it's got three major comebacks, and one of them is someone that hasn't done a movie for 9 years.
Wow.
All right.
Girl, 9 years is like more, 9 years away is more than the shelf life of most people to begin with.
Right.
And there's someone in it from the... There's two people in it from the original. One that does a sex role and one that doesn't do a sex role but has a intricate cameo. And
wow.
My friends are in it. I've got cameos from my friends like Sister Roma and Shantae. And
Girl, I wanted to have a cameo in a porn.
Me too, girl. Right.
Why were you in this one?
I mean...
You were gone. We shot a really amazing group bar scene at Oasis.
Oh my God, I want to have a non-sexual cameo.
I would love to. It's like how, how do people even get those roles?
Should have been in that one.
Oh my god, it's like Helen Mirren being in Caligula.
How do people get those roles?
Well, we actually put it on Facebook. I can't believe we invited everyone. We plied them with drinks.
Oh my god, we want everyone to come.
Yeah, it was amazing. It was pretty awesome. Everyone that came really good job.
So we had him on a while back, and like he was really nice to us. I know that I've heard different things. Sorry, Pearl. I've heard different things from different people, but I think he's so fucking hot, Mickey Taylor.
He's great. You've heard different things. Like what?
Well, I mean, he's got a lot of girl. You know how it is.
He's a darling. He's English, darling.
He's a darling.
He's fucking fabulous. He's so fun, and he's like a little British punker rock star bloke. You know, just a little fucker that is really fun.
He's fucking smoking hot. I don't know, you know, I just love.
He's very pop star hot.
Yeah, he looks like he just should be getting fucked by a boy band. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And have you heard any of his music?
Yeah, of course.
It's really good. Yeah, he's awesome. And you know, I know that Mr. Pam loves him, and you know, they love him over at Naked Sword. And I would love, hopefully, one day I'll get to direct him.
So yeah, it's like I just think he was so nice to us. He was on the show. He was lovely.
Anybody that says anything bad about Mickey doesn't probably know him, because there's nothing bad to say about him.
Yeah, I mean, well, you know, the thing that I've come to realize about the porn industry is that it's very similar in many ways to the drag industry. Like,
well, hello.
A lot of huge egos, a lot of people are like, I don't like this person, and they don't do
of
this.
Of course, and they don't even know why.
Yeah, it's like rivalries that don't exist with people stirring shit.
Right.
Everybody thinks that they're vying for the same position.
Listen, I love porn and I love drag. Anybody that takes their clothes off and fucks on film to me is a star. And anybody that puts a fucking wig and makeup and heels on and struts their shit out the door is a star to me, honey.
Yeah.
I love it.
It takes a lot to put yourself out there in either capacity, you know?
Yeah.
And that's the thing, like, when I said, I took it with a grain of salt when I said that there are some people who don't like Mickey, because, you know, there are, when you put yourself out there, it just opens you to public perception, and everybody's got something to say, even if they don't know shit about you.
Well, and people say vile things about me, and, you know, I used to
I know,
really
but I didn't
care.
Think you would hear about it.
I've heard, Mitch. from that cunt friend of ours.
Roma?
No, not Roma, the other one.
Puta?
Miss Putanesca.
Indeed. What a bitch.
That dirty pea-smelling bitch.
So, well,
pea-smelling bitch.
Come on, R. Kelly. She's going to disappear somewhere into the mountains of New York soon, so we won't ever see the bitch.
Right,
whatever.
How sad.
Well, you know what? Can't you just picture her as a mountain man with a beard down to her fucking crotch?
How's
right
that any
now.
Different? So, Jesus.
I love it.
Mountain man wearing flannel and like a beard to her crotch and body odor. So she's already
Mary.
There, bitch. She just needs to move to
Mary.
Mountain Mary, exactly right.
Mountain Mary, Ozzy, Mountain Mary.
So, God, you like, I guess I did know, because I remember when you went off to Minnesota a while ago, I did know that you were like, at least considering giving up that great space, and it must be a real change of pace.
I went to rehab at Hazleton, and then I just kind of stayed. All my stuff got put in storage, and, you know, I had absolutely no money, and I was living with my friend Kevin, and I thought I would never get another job as long as I lived, and, you know, I still have my own company and my own store, but, you know, there was some tough love there, and I had to prove that I was serious about helping myself, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I'm here, and it's Tuesday, and I'm sober today, and hopefully I'll be sober tomorrow. That's all we can hope for.
Yeah, it's like a real change of pace. You lived, listeners, she lived in this amazing space in the heart of West Hollywood, and you know, everything's popping off right there. And now you live, but then I was getting ready to
say, you know what? I live in an amazing space in an amazing area of Minneapolis called the North Loop. My view of downtown Minneapolis is spectacular. I'll show it to you. Well, if I can't do FaceTiming, I can show you.
Yeah, you know what? This FaceTiming interview thing is kind of bomb because we get to see your expression and get to interact. It's very different.
Yeah, girl, but the listeners don't get to see any of that.
No, but I think it comes across to the listener. Okay.
Well, how does it... Anyway.
It does. You guys... She's got a gorgeous view of downtown.
Beautiful. You can switch there and look at...
You know what? I was going to say... When I was saying that, though, I kind of caught myself because the fact of the matter is you just outlined your schedule for us. You're barely there to begin with, so... It's
and
a crash.
I was in L.A. and I was paying, you know, $4,000 a month for rent.
Unbelievable.
And, you know, and that's foolish.
Wow.
And, you know, so now I'm in Minnesota and I'm in this lovely building. It's like living in a hotel. It's got a concierge. I got my own parking space, and it's, you know, underground parking. It's very chic. This building is very chic.
You guys, I'll tell you, when I went to visit Shishi's place in West Hollywood, I felt so bougie because you go into like a
private... And girl, all it takes for Poyo to feel bougie is to make it a large.
So, but in her place, you went into like a separate elevator and you got to push the pee bitch because she lived in the penthouse, girl. Come through.
Oh, you know what? Big fucking deal.
Bitch... You're talking to somebody who I could relate to Anna Nicole Smith because I thought we were great because when we moved to the double wide trailer, shut up, bitch.
And then when you got into my house, you realized that I was a drag hoarder.
Oh my God, but I was living for it, bitch.
Oh, girl, have you seen Poyo?
Yeah, no, we won't do that, but I was living for it. All that drag.
So right now, obviously, this apartment is smaller because that was a two-floor apartment in West Hollywood. But this is a smaller apartment. It's got concrete floors. It's amazing. It's got these amazing walls, concrete ceilings.
I love it.
Pillars, you know, brick walls. It's pretty awesome. But I've, you know, had to move 30 years of stuff into this smaller two-bedroom apartment. And one of the bedrooms has basically become a storage unit. And I have given so much away. I have sold stuff to Buffalo Exchange. I have thrown stuff away.
No.
I've thrown boxes and boxes of perfume and jewelry and dresses and shit away.
Wait, hold on, girl.
The perfume was rancid, the wigs were dirty, and the dresses were stained.
Oh, never mind.
I'd take them anyway, girl, because that's how they're going to end up anyway.
So I still have, you know... And the more, even as I get rid of stuff, it still doesn't seem like I've gotten rid of anything.
Yeah.
So.
Sometimes it, like, because right before we started this podcast recording today, I was telling Pearl, like, I got all this stuff to do. I need all this, you know, everything needs to be deep cleaned, beyond deep cleaned.
And it still does.
And the thing is, like, every time I clean an area, I think to myself, nobody in their right mind would ever know I just cleaned this area. You know what I mean? Like, you throw out shit and you're like, and nobody would even know. It's like...
Yeah, it just kind of multiplies and kind of, like, has a life of its own. It's like a blob. It kind of just gets bigger and kind of just encompasses everything.
Lord. So,
yeah, but I'm real happy. Everything's going really good. I'm shooting a lot for Falcon and Naked Sword. I'm doing a Hot House movie. It really feels good to be back at the Falcon family with everyone there in Roma. And Adam and Tony DeMarco and everybody there, Mr. Pam, and everybody. They welcomed me back with open arms, which is pretty awesome.
Yeah.
And I'm going to be shooting a movie with Steve Cruz. And I'm shooting for Men.com. And I'm hopefully going to be shooting an Icon Male movie. And, of course, I'm shooting for my own company, Channel One, which, you know, is pretty great. So I'm living the frickin' drag queen porno dream, honey.
Absolutely. Now, the last thing we're going to ask you, because you definitely, just like you got your eye on upcoming hot music, I know you got your eye out for the next porn star, the next big thing.
Always.
Who is it? Who's he going to be?
Well, I think the thing I'm most excited about is this comeback that is happening in this movie that I did for Falcon, which is the boy that I discovered and was extremely popular. He won lots of awards and then just decided to get out of it 9 years ago, and now he's back, which I'm really excited about. But there's a new boy, Scott. Knox, who just signed a contract with Falcon. He's awesome. This beautiful boy. Alonzo is his real name is. I don't want to say his real name, but
right.
That's all I can think of right now is his real name. Gabriel Alonzo. Brazilian hottie.
My vagina just clapped.
Follow him on Twitter.
My vagina just clapped.
He just got a Twitter yesterday. He had 5 followers and now he's got 100. So it's like, you know, he's going to be very popular. He's got a big fat butt and big fat dick and a beautiful, beautiful face. And he's really cute. He can sing and he can dance and he can play guitar and he can fuck. So,
honey, marry me.
Who else? Who else am I loving? Taylor Rain, I'm loving. He just signed a contract with Cocky Boys. There's so many people on my bucket list. I want to go to Europe and shoot some movies, too, to Spain and to London this year at some point. So, I mean, you know, they're coming down the pike left and right, honey.
Yeah, Roma told us a lot about this really hot guy you guys discovered on your Swiss Navy trip to Australia, I guess. He was, like, super hot, she said.
Really cute. I hope he ends up doing a movie. I mean, you know, this contest was awesome. It was so fun. We had a blast. Being there with Brent Corrigan and J.J. Knight and Roma and Ellen from Swiss Navy, it was a real magical trip. Being with all those friends and, you know, we went out one night to this amazing Chinese restaurant, you know. In Australia, they have these restaurants. It's on my. I love going where they have the tank full of fish and lobsters and crabs and all these things. You can go up and say, "I would like to eat her, please." So, you know, sorry to all the vegetarians out there.
Girl, I'm not. Whatever, I'm not either.
You's a meat eaters, aren't you, bitches?
Oh, I definitely am, honey.
You have no idea.
Yeah.
Especially if it's uncut.
Oh! Yeah, I like that too.
Yeah, me too.
With extra cheese.
Oh, God.
Gross.
When are you back in San Francisco?
I know. Just come to San Francisco and you can get all the ranky extra cheese you can handle. Right?
Lord, and then some. But when are you coming back? That's a valid question. When are you coming back?
Well, I was just there doing some post-production for this movie, and I've shot the movie there, and then I don't know when I'm coming back. Hopefully soon to cast this Hot House movie.
Hot.
So
remember, I want to be a non-sexual role. I'll bring in a pizza or something and drag. Hello. Whatever. You know, whatever you gotta do, bitch.
True story.
Hey boys, would you like a slice?
I forget his name because it was years ago, but I dated.
A date you dated?
I dated one of the directors of Hot House.
Oh!
I feel like I can't remember his name.
Girl, it must have been something real.
A very, very, very memorable date.
Yeah.
Right. No, it was a one-time only kind of thing.
Was it Christian Owen?
Nope.
No, I love Christian, by the way. Christian and Jimmy, I love them. They're my
favorite. Who the hell did you date from Hot House?
He was, he was an older gentleman.
Okay.
I remember him having black hair. This was like...
Girl.
What year?
I was in my early 20s. I was like 22, 20...
No, 30 years ago?
Hey!
That
bitch.
Was probably like 7-8 years ago.
Oh my god.
I want to say his name was like Robert or
Nick Fox.
No. I can't remember, girl, but.
Girl, it was so meaningful to her.
Right, girl.
Yes,
really.
Right.
If I remember.
Oh, girl, I used to date the hottest boy from. I can't remember his name. But that means you blew him in a toilet, girl, once.
Ah, no!
In a broom closet.
Right. Not in a broom closet, bitch.
All right.
Honey, there are so many places. Listen, in Australia, there's this very tragic tranny club called the Taxi Club. And it's so infamous. It's so fabulous. And all the girls go there, and it's the titty queens and the drag queens and stuff. And I stocked out a place in the bathroom and started lining up boys and were sucking them off in the bathroom and got kicked out.
Of course.
And people said, you got kicked out of the taxi club? What were you doing? And it was like, because it's really, really hard to get kicked out of that hellhole. So, it's like winning an Oscar, bitch.
Right. When there's a will, there's a way.
You know, I would love to be able to say that I've never done something scandalous like that, but I remember one time years ago, like, I was cracked out of my mind in New York City, and I met this guy, and we fucked in a stairwell, and it, like, in the back of a bar, and a bar back walked in on us, and we were like, whoops! And the guy's like, I'll just come back. In.
Oh,
Lord. It was, ugh.
That to me was a blast, doing things like that, scandalous stuff like that.
Of course, I used to love it.
Yeah.
It was life.
I was known for that kind of stuff, and now I'm just an old lady, a sober old lady that drags penises going in assholes and plays music for the kids.
You know. Sounds fabulous. Well, Chi-Chi, how can our listeners follow you?
Well, on Twitter, I'm DJ Chi-Chi LaRue, at DJ Chi-Chi LaRue. Facebook, Chi-Chi LaRue. I also have a fan page on there, and my boy Larry Pashotti page, and my Chi-Chi LaRue store page.
Girl.
And on Instagram, Chi-Chi LaRue. Yeah,
just Chi-Chi LaRue.
All right.
We love you. Thank you for joining
us.
Oh my God. Well, thank you for joining us. It's been I've been nagging you for like a year.
I know. And hopefully this turns out without all that crackling.
Oh, well, whatever.
People are going to think we're on crack.
not this one, girl. No, ma'am.
We're just like shrieking, too. The listeners ought to be getting a real treat on this one.
Can you imagine someone turning it on just as I'm going, ah-ha! God, I've been crashing their car, driving off the Golden Gate Bridge. All right, well, I love you.
I love you, too.
Thank you for calling me and talking to me and let me spew my filth.
Well, we love your filth.
Yes, girl, yes.
All
so
right.
Be on the lookout from Falcon for this very exciting announcement coming very soon.
Cannot wait.
I'll just say one thing.
H2H2.
I don't know what the fuck that means, but okay. It sounds like hydrogen peroxide.
H2H2.
H2H2. Oh. Okay.
All right. I love you guys.
All right. Bye, sweetheart.
Be safe. Be good to yourself and be good to others, goddammit.
Maybe
we will.
Love you too.
Bye.
Oh my God, she's a fucking hoot and a holler, girl.
Uh-huh.
All right, you guys, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to have more Party Foul Radio right after this.
Hi, this is Poyet Omar, reminding all of our Party Foul Radio family and listeners to support our sponsoring companies. If you're looking for a phenomenal haircut and live in the Bay Area, please visit Arlen and Jesse at Daddy's Barbershop, located at 19th Street at Castro in the Castro District. If you're planning a visit to San Francisco and want to know the latest happenings in the LGBTQ nightlife and entertainment scene, visit liveleft.com. Left Magazine provides all of the latest celebrity interviews, photo pictorials, and updates on the happenings in and around San Francisco's Bay Area. And finally, for your intimate personal moments, consider Swiss Navy Premium Personal Lubricants. Swiss Navy is certain to have you ready for your big night.
All right, you guys, we are back with more Party Foul Radio.
Hello?
Oh, Pearl's on the phone currently, hey, lining up our next guest. He is the promoter of her pageant that she just won.
Hey, Khalees.
Khalees Black, everyone.
Hello.
Hi, Khalees.
Hello, how are you doing?
Good. We are quite so well.
This is Pearl with my co-host, Poyet Omar. Uh-huh. So we wanted to have you on to talk about you and your partner, Evan's pageant that I just came down to win in
went
Seattle.
Went up the wind. What else?
Miss Premier International.
So how did you guys start the pageant? Okay.
So how we started the pageant is very simple. Like back, I think it was like 2014 when Amora, my drag daughter, won Le Femme International. At that time, Darcel decided that he wanted to cancel the pageant that was going to be the last year. And that was Amora's first time ever competing in the pageant. And I always wanted to bring the type of drag I grew up with back home in Greenville, South Carolina, to Seattle, my new home. So I decided to come up with my own pageant, and we named it Miss Premier and Miss Premier. And that was giving Amora a chance to have a step down, so she'd know what it feels like to step down. And also, for me to bring some of the drag that I grew up with back home over here to the West Coast.
How does it differ between the two?
Say it again?
How does it differ between the two places?
Yeah, what is the difference between West Coast and your East Coast Southern drag?
Oh, it's very different. Like, from instance, like, here I noticed everyone loves showgirl. It's all about, like, showgirl. And back home in South Carolina, it's about fashion and runway.
Oh.
It's all about the look. It's all about standing in pose. You look, you're carrying yourself like you're on a high-end magazine or you're doing a runway shoot. That's why back home, our categories are mainly presentation, evening gown, swimsuit, or sportswear, talent. Over here is showgirl, and that's different from what we do over there.
But describe showgirl for the listeners who may not understand the distinction.
Of a showgirl?
Showgirl, like, the film International, it's like Las Vegas showgirl, where you have a headdress, a backpack with big feathers. A couple of patches that do that here is Miss Northwest has fantasy, where it's showgirl and it's like carnival type stuff. Miss Utopia Seattle, they have Pacific Islander theme, so that's with sand like feathers. And Miss La Femme International does showgirl with feathers. And I know now there's a new pageant out there called Show Queen. They have showgirl.
Yeah, okay. I mean, because you meant literal. When I think of showgirl, I think of one thing, but you meant literal showgirl.
Yeah.
Like, okay, well.
Yeah, they do literal showgirl here and pageants here. And us back home is more fashion-based pageant.
Right. I mean, I did the Universal Panache pageant in Hawaii, and it was, there's a whole showgirl, you know, I was in the, there's a showgirl category, basically, and it's all about that, and I did not love that particularly.
Those can be really amazing.
Well, yeah, they can be amazing, but it was just like, I guess, Khalees, like, I come from a version that's of drag that's more similar to what you described being in at back home, so.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, so when I moved over here, I was like, wait a minute, showgirl, what is this? Oh my God, you got to get all these feathers. Like my first year competing for La Femme, I had to do homework on showgirl. And I was like, oh, so it's like this burlesque type thing. And then when I competed, I was like, oh my God, no, y'all want this big, extravagant, carnival type showgirl stuff. Okay, I get it.
Girl, right. I nearly went broke buying 400 pheasant feathers. I was bitch,
girl.
I'm sorry, but those pheasants, like...
A showgirl costs some money, girl.
Showgirls will break you. Because I remember getting ready for showgirls. I was like, okay, so I want to bring my side, like, let's have girls compete on a different level. And plus, now Continental is moving over here on this side. USA. See, I grew up with Continental Plus, DOI, USA, Miss Gay America. And it's all about the evening gown being drenched in stones. People go up for gown. They go up for sportswear. Over here, it was new for me to get used to showgirl.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I love EOY, Entertainer of the Year, and I wish that Entertainer of the Year was more prominent on the West Coast. Mm-hmm. I think that the one thing I love about EOY versus some of the others is I feel like it allows you a greater range of ability to showcase a personality through the kind of creative wear that you can do and things of that nature.
Yep, yep, and that's what it is like. And there's girls over here that fit EOY, and they don't. I remember when EOY was in California. Wasn't that like 1 year with Shangela won, and then next thing you know, it disappeared.
Yeah, Shangela competed and won the first year that they were in California, and yeah. Then I don't think they ever had it again. So, way to kill it, Shangela.
I like Shangela.
No, I'm just kidding. I mean, of course I like Shangela too, but I'm like, yeah, I just, it's very strange because California does not seem to be pageant-oriented.
Right.
And it's...
Which is why I said earlier, why I've had to fly to, or go down up to Seattle.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard for the pageant systems to take root and take hold in California, and I think that part of that is because... you think of the bigger places in California, like San Francisco has never been really pageant-oriented.
Right.
L.A., the girls who, instead of focusing on a pageant, they'd rather focus on getting on Drag Race, because right. It's the hub there, and then what else, you know?
Right. What there is nothing else.
Is a bitch going to be in Fresno, going to be like...
Hell! Right.
And see, me, and I love pageants. Like, over here, there's not that many pageants over here. Like in Seattle, there's LaFemme Washington, there's Miss Northwest, there's Nubian Pride, now there's Miss Community, and there's Utopia Seattle. I think I'm the sixth system over here. Other than that, it's nothing but court system.
Yeah. And girl, we have court systems obviously here in San Francisco, and we were actually just talking about them a bit ago on the podcast, but the court system is so very different than the pageant system. Very, very different. I mean, some ways I think are similar, but, and by that I just mean that often the pageant system is based on sort of people paying their dues and then, like, you know, maybe competing a few years and then finally winning the big one or whatever, mm-hmm. But yeah, it's just a very different mindset and mentality.
So I'm just
it's really different. I think the only thing that loop regular pageants together with the court system pageant, a lot of the pageants I know of, they have a cause that they go out for.
Right.
Like, for instance, Miss Premier, we're all about homeless gay youth, so we donate or do fundraisers for the Orion Center. So that's how we kind of correlate with the court system. But other than that, it's like, no, there's no due. No meetings. You'll have to be a member for a year in order to be the big queen.
Right.
Now.
Yeah. I mean, we, my drag mother, Linda Lakes, and I created a pageant like about 8 or 9 years ago that initially we were tied to particular causes each year, but then we opened it up to a couple of years ago, we allowed the winner to choose the pageant's charity of choice. So, like, whatever they represented going into the pageant got the money. And you know, I think it's... The reason behind that is because one of the things that people look at pageants as is being very... somewhat selfish, because people are spending a lot of money for this crown for kind of glory versus doing something
girl,
that gives back
I
in some
do
capacity.
Not care.
Well, girl, no. I mean, no, I'm not saying anything's wrong with that, right. But I do think that that's one of the things that people look at and look at. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I see that too. I can see where it could be that way too, because some people judge pageant girls sometimes as, no, we're being stuck up and snobby. It's like, no, it's not that we're being stuck up and snobby. It's just that we compete. We have our peers judge us. We get on stage and let people we don't know just rip us to shreds.
Right, bitch, for real.
We'll go get our score sheets and fix what they did. And sometimes we may be too clean and polished, and other people are like, oh, that stuck up. It's like, no, we're competitive. We like to compete. It's not, we're nice and sweet, So, yeah, I can see where people can see that.
Well, I just think that, you know, I know some girls that in the past, like, my first interactions with girls who are in the pageant system involved a lot of discussion about, I spent $6,000 on my dress, or, you know, whatever, and I just wanted to murder the bitch. You know, I was like, that's crazy. You know, that's a car. But but at the same time, like, one of the things that I've begun to appreciate over a decade in the drag industry is that sometimes if you're not doing something to keep pushing yourself forward, it can start to feel really stagnant and really repetitive. Mm-hmm. So, you know, doing something that keeps you inspired, if your goal is to compete in 6 months at something and that moves you forward, then so be it. Do it.
Uh-huh. Yeah, because that's how you grow. I mean, that's how you evolve. Because I tell my drag kids every day, drag is just like fashion. One day you in, the next day you can be out. So you're going to have to keep up with the trend. If you keep, it's forever evolving. You're learning. You're going to pick it up. If girls just want to stick in those set ways, you're not going to grow. And that's what pageants help girls do, grow. It's like, because that's where you start looking up designs to try to get that latest gown. You know, sometimes you look at that price tag and like, I can't believe I spent $10,000 on a whole package for a pageant when I could have put that on a car or a vacation.
Mm-hmm. Or a home.
A down payment or a home. But
a home.
Love that. Some people love that. Love the thrill of getting on stage to show how involved they are in fashion. And sometimes fashion costs. Ooh, it costs to look good sometimes on stage, and it costs to look bad, too.
Right. That's the truth, girl. That is the truth.
Oh, it costs to look bad, too, because sometimes you can spend some money on some sick-thin fabric and get it done, and when you put it on, oh, my God, it don't fit.
Right.
It don't fit, or you just got the... Yeah.
So tell us a bit. So I told the listeners a little bit about like how the pageants ran, what the categories and stuff are. Why did you choose the categories that you guys have?
Oh, why I choose these categories that we have is very simple. When I grew up in drag back home, everyone looked up to the continental girl. Everyone wants to be continental. So if you look real close, our categories are almost like continental, because continental have presentation, but the current queen's able to choose presentation and change it each year. And I thought that would just be a hassle, having to come up with a different color each year for a girl to come with presentation. So we just picked two colors, and we picked aqua and white for our colors. Then it's interview, and it's female interview. And the reason why we chose female interview, so the judges will see what they're going to get through the year from you. Because back home, girls pay other people to pay them. Paint them, I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm.
So if you do female interview, sometimes you have to paint yourself a female interview, so we'll see what your look is going to be like the whole year. Then there's swimsuit. I chose swimsuit because it's easy to prepare for swimsuit. I feel like the category that's so hard to prepare for is sportswear.
Sportswear. Oh, my God. What pageant has sportswear as a category?
I would love sportswear, bitch.
No, ma'am.
I would love that.
I would hate that.
No, sportswear, I feel, because you got to make sure the fabric is on point. You got to make sure the fit's right. You got to make sure the sportswear fits the season, the trend. You know, a swimsuit, you can't go wrong with swimsuit.
Right.
Swimsuit is clean. Sportswear, you can find so many flaws.
Oh, girl, I only did one pageant that had a swimwear portion. It was very different than this pageant, because, bitch, I came out being carried in a half shell dressed as a mermaid. I said, this is the ultimate swimwear, bitch. I sure did.
Mm-hmm. I will.
Yeah,
That's terrific. Yeah, I mean, I can definitely... And those are also fairly standard categories. Mm-hmm. I was surprised when Pearl told us earlier in the show that she is the first trans winner of your pageant, because bathing suit seems like a category that is more geared towards trans girls than not trans girls. Like, than just drag...
Oh, no, I compete, like, for instance, I'm getting ready for a pageant here soon that's called Black Continental at Large, and they have four sort of swimsuit, and I'm not a trans person, so I love wearing swimsuit. As long as I can get my hip pads in and give me that hourglass figure, I'm a plus-size girl, but I know how to manipulate things to make it seem like I did have my breasts.
In a swimsuit, so I'm not bothered. I do, you bitch.
Now she's switching it up. Anyway.
No, I think that girl, I do think it's a tricky category.
I'm really excited for, like, for example, Large and Lovely is a pageant that I think is, like, one of the next big up-and-coming ones. But they have lingerie as one of the categories.
Yeah.
And these girls work it out. I live.
Come on, lingerie.
For Large and Lovely.
Yep.
It's everything,
because
girl.
I just competed at Large and Lovely. This was my second time going to Large and Lovely and competed. And, yeah, one of their categories is sexy lingerie.
That's everything.
And, yes, that is. And, you know, some plus-size girls are ashamed to show their body. But, baby, it's okay.
Right.
I'm okay with putting on sexy lingerie and trancing across that stage because my baby
girl, you
is
have to
beautiful.
Live.
You better work, Large and Lovely.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. So, yeah, so I can see where you can wear a girl like drag queens where you're like, oh my God, I don't want to do swimsuit. I know a couple of drag queens that want to do pageants with swimsuit. And I was like, girl, it's easy. You can still wear pantyhose to hide your hip pads.
Right.
Fine. You can, there's ways to make your swimsuit. Get your swimsuit made where you look really good in a swimsuit. You can't buy it off the rack.
Right.
That's the only difference. We can't buy ours off the rack. We have to go get someone that make ours. That's the only difference.
Right. I mean, I still think that it's a tricky category, but I think that part of being in a pageant is trying to be smart about what you choose. I think that's a huge part because, you know, something that, depending on your size or shape or all of these things that are hip and trendy and hot right now may not look so grand on you. You know what I mean?
Right.
So you have to be smart with the patterns and everything you choose. And I think that's part of drag in general because what looks good on one person does not look good on the next.
Right.
Yep.
So,
that's why I tell everyone drag is just like fashion.
So, how do you guys hope the pageant changes over the years? Because I know you guys are like a fresh pageant and you have like a lot of aspirations for it.
Well, what I'm looking for with the pageant is just to bring drag back to where I'm from. I love that old Southern drag. I also wanted to grow to prelims. I would want to have prelims in the future to have other girls because I really want other people to see that there's amazing drag over here in Seattle. It's literally on the West Coast because there's a lot of good entertainers that come from California. I mean, a couple of the RuPaul Drag Race winners are from California.
Yeah.
There's a lot of good entertainers from Portland and Oregon, and there's a lot of good entertainers here in Washington, but they just get looked over. But right when RuPaul Drag Race came, they're starting to notice us, and I just want them to know that, just come over. We're fun. Just enjoy drag here. Yes, it's different, but, you know, that's what drag is drag. Everyone wears drag. When you go to work, that's a form of drag.
sometimes if I have to dress up and put on a suit and tie or something like that to go to an interview or something, I feel far more in drag that way than I do when I've got on my accoutrement.
I don't even know if I can see you in a suit.
I'm the same way. Like, when you got to go to work, you're like, oh, my God. It's just, you know, makeup and stuff. Okay, I get it. We have to get up early. It starts like 2 hours to put on your makeup. You have 2.5, 3 hours to add the body. Oh, but just to get ready for an interview, you got to make sure the shirt matched the suit. Oh, I love so much.
Yeah.
I'd rather just throw on a gown and keep on going.
Right.
Oh, yes, I'd rather throw on indeed than have to put outfit together for an interview. Oh, no.
So how did you first get involved in drag back on the East Coast?
I was actually dared to do a pageant back home.
Ooh.
Because if you wouldn't know, I'm a very shy person. And so drag was a form to open me up. And that's what my friends noticed. So back in the day, I'm an old girl. I turned 40 last year in December.
Oh, go, don't worry about it. Boy, I was like 56.
I'm 44, you horrible bitch.
So I turned 40 in December. So back in the days, what we used to do was go over friends' house, drink, and play truth or dare. And I was dare to do a pageant at a bar back home called Miss Firecracker. So one of my drag queen friends, she prepared me for this pageant and everything. And what I did for my package was cool. I came out in my first category with my beard still on. By the time we made it to crowning, I was a drag queen. They transformed me into a drag queen, and I didn't win. The judges said I should consider running for the newcomer title at that bar, not like a campy pageant. But it opened me up, and I enjoy entertaining in front of people. So that's why I started drag. Because now I'm this bubbly, outgoing person where I just love, like, talking to people now. I'm not shy in front of crowds anymore. So, and I thank my friends for that every day, for daring me to put that dress on, to go on that stage, to be in front of all those people, to have them judge me. And it was fun. I had a good time.
You know, it's one thing to dare your friend to get in drag or whatever. But bitch, they dared you to do a pageant, girl. Right. They really threw you in there. Oh, honey, they went in. You don't need no kind of enemies, honey.
Right.
No, but then I learned, though, I know how to drive a stick, and I love driving manuals, and I'm not shy anymore. And Miss Premier is a fun passion. I make sure that the contestants are not stressed. So that's my goal.
Oh, my gosh.
So do you want to tell us a little bit about the formers?
One of our formers is Amora D.R. Black. She's my drag daughter. She was the emeritus. And then we have LaFabiana Hunt. They both are queens that's on the cast at Arc Lace Nightclub. LaFabiana and I are former Nubian Pride sisters. She crowned me Nubian Pride. At the time, Amora was a king, and it was Dom Dior, so Dom was LaFabiana's king.
That's right. I forgot about that. Formers.
Those are our formers. Yep.
All right.
So you're the third.
I'm the third, yeah.
Okay, cool. So...
Yep, she's the third.
Okay, so are all... Like, is this a black pageant?
No, the girl I ran against was white.
Okay. Well,
no,
I mean...
No, we're open to everyone. And that's why we were so happy to have some trans girls this year, because we wanted to show people that we're not just an African-American pageant, not just a boy pageant. We're open to everyone.
Well, cool.
Yep.
Yeah, we're open to everyone. So, yeah, anyone that's interested, just go to our website. It's www.misspremier.com. It gives a breakdown of the categories. And the information you see on our website, that's the information we give the judges. So, yeah, we're very fair across the board. In a couple of days, we're going to email you, Pearl, and Sapphire, the score, so you can see how both of y'all did against each other.
Perfect. I can't wait to see them. My dresser has all my scores, so I still haven't been able to see them.
Yeah, well, that's what we do. And we're that system where we're all about giving you your scores the night of and not saying, oh, we'll get them to you 3 or 4 days. No, the judges are there, so if you have any questions,
you can ask them.
While they're still there, you can ask them.
Yeah.
So we give you your scores right then and there.
That's amazing. Yeah, so that's MissPremier.com.
Yes.
So, listeners, if you want to know more about the title that Pearl just won, go to MissPremier.com.
And check it out.
Girl, are there pictures of Pearl up now?
Not yet, girl.
Oh, we're going to put those up in 2 days, too, once we send out the her score sheets. That's when we're updating the website. I already got the picture on my Facebook page with all three of the queens there, so everyone can see who the new girl is.
Right.
And we're so looking forward to working with Pearl this year. We're looking forward to help you on your next adventure. So if you have any other pageants coming up, please let us know, and we can see what we can do to help you reach your goals and win that next crown.
All right.
So what I'm hearing, listeners, if you go immediately to MissPremier.com, you will not have to see Pearl. So get
shut
there, bitch.
Up. Shut up. Kalise, how can our listeners follow you?
I'm on Facebook, KaliseSt.JamesBlack.com. So that's where you can follow me on Facebook. I'm always on Facebook. I post pictures. I let people know where I'm appearing. So yeah, you can find me on Facebook.
And her name is CELYS.
Yes, not Kalise, not the other Kalise.
Yes, girl. Not so it's C. Yes. So Kalise's name.
I had to be different.
You yes. know. Unique.
So CELYS St. James Black.
Boom.
So, well, thanks for joining us, sweetheart.
Well, thanks for having me, and y'all enjoy the rest of your evening. And I'll talk to you again real soon, Pearl.
All right.
Aw, how sweet.
Bye-bye.
Bye, y'all.
Bye, honey. All right, listeners, that was Kalise St. James Black, the promoter of Pearl's new title, her new crown.
Miss Premier International.
So go check them out at MissPremier.com. Meanwhile, we're going to take another quick break, and we'll be back with more Party Foul Radio right after this.
Hey, y'all. This is Bob the Drag Queen. You are listening to Party Foul Radio with Pearl Del Mar and Pearl. Listen up, girl.
All right, you guys, we are back with more Party Foul Radio. I'm Poet Almar.
And I'm Pearl Tease.
Oh, my God. So, while we were talking to Kalise, Pearl was like, what the fuck? I got a text from Chanel Rivera, okay? Chanel is an infamous booze hound here in San Francisco and, like, basically one of my drag daughters. So, anyway, so I had gotten this thing on Facebook that... It starts out like one of those, like a gum commercial for the one that does the 5, 4, 3, 2, like life happens in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. It's like, I don't know what the gum is, but the commercials show like a countdown and then like one's like these girl, like girl and a boy are sitting next to each other at a party, and it's like, life begins. She pops a piece of the gum, and it says, life begins in 5, 4, 3, 2, and then she kisses the ball, like that kind of thing. Okay. So you're, and then another one's like, life begins in like 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, and a boy like rips off his clothes and jumps in skinny dip with his friends, like all these fun things, whatever, crazy things. Anyway, so this Facebook message, here, Pearl, I'm going to send it to you so you can watch it.
Oh, no. You can just show me on your phone.
No, girl, I'm sending it to you, you whore. So, anyway, after I send this to Pearl, I'm going to tell you what happened to fucking...
Just send it to me via Facebook.
I am sending it to you via Facebook, bitch.
Girl, you can't... She can't even work her goddamn phone,
you guys. I can't too, you bitch. Stop it. Okay, sent. It'll be like, bling. So, watch. Look, Poet Omar sent you a message.
Chick name.
Look at it!
Oh.
Obviously, you're supposed to look at it, bitch.
Yeah, but do I have to look at it right now?
What is yeah, this? Of course. We're talking about it on the radio.
Oh, my God.
So it starts out like a gum commercial, but then it flashes. Do you want to describe it for the listeners?
No, bitch. Who sent that to you?
Sandra Rose sent it to me. My daughter Sandra sent it
Girl,
to me.
Girl, send her home. I can't.
So, it flashes from, like, the beginning of a gum commercial to this bitch, like, vigorously giving a guy a blowjob, like, so fast. Anyway.
That is a mess.
So, I... Wait for this. So, send it to Chanel. Chanel is dying, whatever. Chanel sends it to her friend... La Bambi.
I love Bambi.
Okay, right? So she sends her BFF Bambi.
Oh, God.
And so, and Bambi's like, oh, my best friend sent me this funny video on Facebook. Bambi is waiting, is sitting with her 10-year-old brother, her mom, and her dad.
Oh, shit.
And she's got her iPad hooked to the fucking TV.
Well, good thing you don't hear anything too crazy. Oh, wait, the video?
She clicks the video, which plays it on the TV, and she's like, my best friend just sent me this funny video.
Oh, shit.
With her mom and her dad and her little brother, and the chick's like...
Oh, my God.
Sucking dick. And Bambi's sitting there in front of her parents.
Oh, God.
Gagged. Betcha she won't play any other video. Fucking anything else that Chanel sends her.
At least she doesn't have to take the blame for that. Chanel sent that to her. That's fucked up.
So,
oh god. So
meanwhile, the mother is sitting there like, she's all, that's not right. And the little brother is fucking like red and silent. And he's like 10.
That poor kid.
Traumatized. Oh, anyway, just
you guys have to see this goddamn. I don't.
It just shows what a filthy fucking whore Chanel Rivera is.
Right.
Of course, I'm the one who sent it to her, so right. That makes me like...
I can't... Just a mess, girl.
So, I don't remember... We were talking early in the show. We got cut off.
Oh, about your pageant.
Right, okay, so...
So, another reason why I don't know if I want to run your pageant again is because I kind of want my little drag sister to win a crown while I have one also.
Who, Amora?
Amora, yeah.
Well, I mean, okay, so... What you're saying, like, it's not guaranteed that Amora would win, but what you're saying is that you don't want to compete against your own little sister.
Right.
So, I think that a lot of the younger girls are going to compete this year. I think Sandra will probably want to compete. Maybe Sayani will want to compete. It's like...
I that's another thing. I have a feeling, like, if word gets out that I would compete for this pageant, they would all be like, no, I'm not doing it.
Well, I would hope that wouldn't be the case, but I could understand why, how that could be, because... Girls don't want to compete against somebody they know has, like, amazing packages sort of already prepared and whatever. But, yeah, this year I think will be very exciting. It'll be a little awkward because one of the things, as the producer of the pageant, I can 100% say with absolute certainty, we have judges. I never know until the fucking envelope is handed to me who's winning. Mm-hmm. I don't care who wins as long as they do their fundraising event, whatever. But... It's going to be interesting because in the past 9 years, two of my drag daughters have competed and won. And this year, a number of my... I mean, at this point, I feel like I'm so involved in the drag community and there's so many people who, whether they're my sister or whether they're my daughter or like my niece or my what, you know, I'm like, you know, like, I'm like a mother figure, even to Amora. You know what I mean? I know that there's, like, that, because she hangs out with all my daughters, and, like, they're all, like, a little pack that sort of run together,
Speaking of your daughters, for a second, I thought Sandra was Mercedes' daughter.
That's come up several times in conversation. Like, people have asked, actually, this past weekend I worked with Carne Asada, Aju, and Bianca Simone Gemini, and all of them, they were talking about the fact that there was a lot of thought that Sandra was Mercedes' daughter. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, what I explained to them was that I think in this city the perception is if you are a pretty queen of color, that you're automatically...
I'm Mercedes. Not Mercedes' daughter.
Well, that's why I said a pretty queen of color. No, I mean, I know that, but like, I think there's like an association with that, and I think that the one thing, as I told, well, because I guess like Sandra has also done performances with them and this and that and stuff, and as I told the girls there in that private gathering, I said my philosophy for my children is like, okay, I'm your mother, but that doesn't mean that I'm, like, the end-all, be-all. Like, I've been doing this a long time, and I still, if I'm with Mercedes or Simone or anybody who I respect and admire, if I see something that they're doing, Alina, I'm like, okay, how did you get your eye like that? Mm-hmm. Like, how do, you know, what product, whatever. Go out and perform as much as you can with as many people as you can. Ask as many questions as you can. Get as much information as you can, because that's how you learn, and that's how you grow. Like, I think that some places and some drag families might be a little more like, our family doesn't associate with, you know, it's like, no, whatever. Like, go and learn. I will tell you, I've got daughters who, Sayani and Sandra and others who are black or brown or like something. And I'm like, you need to go to Mercedes and ask what, you know, because I don't have that personal experience of being a person of color trying to color match. And girl, if you're out there and you are a person who is brown and you're trying to color match yourself for drag, you know what I'm about to say is 100% true. You fuck it up and you're gray. You look like a corpse. Right. Don't do it. So find out the products. And I don't have that personal experience. So anyway, originally what I was saying is that I think there's a lot of these newer girls who all are coming out of my show who are going to be competing. And I think that's wonderful. Mm-hmm. I would love for some of the girls who've competed in the past to do it again, which is why I think it's awesome that Amora wants to do it. She did last year.
Well, I don't know if she wants to do it again. I'm going to probably try to talk her.
Well, I would love for her to do it again. I think that there's a lot of girls who do it. And then, like, I look at Amora, for example. Her makeup has changed dramatically since she did it last year. Mm-hmm. Her skills as a seamstress are improving, which allows her greater opportunities to bring some fun, cool looks. Mm-hmm. There's all kinds of stuff. So, like, these girls should, I would think that hopefully they will do it again because of the fact that, you know. But anyway, that it's going to be July 22nd at the cafe. Announcements are going to be coming forward with that very soon with whatever. I do want to say, right before we started recording the podcast, I had run from across town because one of my old friends from middle school. Okay, let me rephrase that. Somebody I knew in middle school was in San Francisco, the Bay Area, with three of her female friends. Like, they're like a little, you know, posse of sisters. They're basically like sisters from different misters. And she follows me on Instagram and follows me on Facebook and all this stuff. And she was in town and we got a chance to catch up and visit. So, Dainty Hurst, thank you so much for taking time out of your trip to San Francisco and introducing me to your girlfriends. So, the reason I went back in, we were not really friends in middle school. Like, Dainty was, her name is Dainty, D-A-I-N-T-E-E. She was like the most popular girl in our middle school. She was like the captain of the cheerleading squad and all this stuff. And my best friend, Robert Sullivan, I think he ended up dating later on, maybe in high school, briefly or whatever. But I was not in that crowd. You know, my best friend ultimately ended up in that crowd. But I wasn't. But I had, like, the biggest crush on her because she was the most popular. I wanted, basically, to be Dainty Hurst. That's what I said to her. I'm like, today I was like, first I thought I had a major crush on you. And then I realized later on, like, I kind of wanted to be you. Because captain of the cheerleaders and this and that. And the cool girl, and I always never felt that way. And so, but the great thing about life is that as we grow and change, like, you know, the relationship is different. And she was really cool. Her girlfriends were, like, amazing. They're all really beautiful. They looked like those girls from middle school, all just grown up, you know. Mm-hmm. So it was really wonderful, the opportunity to spend some time with them. And it was only an hour, a little over an hour, something like that. But it was nice catching up. And now we have each other's phone numbers. And so that was a really nice experience.
That was, like, what, 40 years ago? 30 years ago?
Dainty,
like,
I hope you find her and just smack the fuck out of her. It was probably, well, in this case, it probably was, like, almost 30 years ago.
That's what I thought.
It was like, well, because we were in 7th grade and 8th yeah. grade, so we were like, you figure 7th, 12, 13, 14 years old, maybe. Mm-hmm. And so I'm 44, Dainty is probably in that range, so 30 years ago.
Come on,
40s. So, anyway. Oh, and something else I wanted to tell you guys about, and hopefully you'll go check this out. Of course, you all know that I contribute regularly, like celebrity interviews and such, to the Huffington Post. Most of my work appears on Huffington Post Queer Voices or on the sports if I'm covering professional wrestling. But my mom for years has been urging me to write fiction. My mom really thinks that there's a book in me, you know, just waiting to come out.
Oh.
I'm a natural born storyteller.
Oh.
Fucking bitch. Oh. So, a friend of mine, one of my friends, Steven, recently was like, girl, I really think that you need to write fiction or whatever. And so, I sat down a few days ago, like last week sometime, and I wrote my first piece of fiction. And the thing is, the reason that I'm so comfortable writing this is it's only semi-fictional. It's actually fictionalized-ish stories based on my own experiences of living in San Francisco for almost 20 years. Mm-hmm. So I published the first piece. It's called Life by the Bay. And I published the first piece, which was called And So It Begins. And the second piece, called The Interview, just published 2 days ago. And this afternoon, I finished the third installment of it. So,
all right.
I mean, I'm kind of excited, and I know that my mommy is excited because she's been waiting for me to do this for a really long time. You know, I was 8 years old when I wrote my first piece of fiction called The Rich Pig.
Well, that's fabulous.
It was called The Rich Pig.
I'm not surprised.
It was about a pig on a farm, and the farmer is very wealthy, and he's feeding the pig, and he loses his wallet, and then the pig finds the wallet, and begins to try to buy people's friendship with the money that he finds inside, and then reaches an emotional conundrum. I was 8.
Oh, well, you know, these things happen.
You guys, Pearl was all really engaged when we were talking about pageants, but as soon as I started talking about anything like this, she's like, well, whatever, that's fantastic, good job, the pig, yeah, that pig is delightful.
Where can these guys find this book? These not books, they're short stories.
They're short stories, there's a series of them. The easiest way to find them is to Google Pollo Del Mar at Huffington Post, and it'll pull up my profile as an author there. But one of the things that I'm optimistic about, there is a very famous series based in San Francisco. It's called Tales of the City. Okay, are you familiar with Tales of the City? Mm-hmm. So, Tales of the City is an anthology of short stories written by Armistead Maupin, a legend in both the San Francisco community, the queer community, and as a writer in general.
Yeah.
But he wrote this real slice of life series of stories about what it was like in San Francisco in the 70s, 80s, even into the 90s. But what many people don't realize, because they became familiar with Tales of the City as a book series, is that Armistead Maupin originally wrote these as a collection of short stories. He was a journalist, a columnist with the San Francisco Chronicle.
Oh.
And he would write short stories that would publish on a regular basis in the Chronicle. And people would buy the paper to tune in to see the next chapter. That's why the books never kind of end. They sort of just, like, the stories sort of just come to a stop somewhere, and then they pick up, you know, with the next series. Because, and that's how one of the things that has always kept me from sitting down to write a book is that books have a beginning, a middle, and an end. And bringing a story to a resolution of an end and sort of wrapping it up in a nice tight bow, like, oh, look, it's over, has never been my forte. Like, I can do that with a short story, but I can't, like, the idea of telling a story that is 240 pages long that comes to a conclusion is overwhelming to me. But as a writer, writing a series of short stories that encapsulate certain, like a snapshot of people's lives at different mm-hmm. times, I can totally do that. And after being in San Francisco for 20 years, like, I've met incredible numbers of people. Some of them have become famous, and some have been famous and are not anymore, mm-hmm. and some are whatever. And so weaving these stories together is something that does not feel overwhelming to me. I can write 800 words or publish it, and, you know, we might come back to that character, or we might not, or I don't know. This is all new to me.
Maybe you could just kind of sort of start one and keep it on the back burner and see how long you could grow it.
Well, the thing is, like, each of these short stories follow the same characters.
Oh, okay.
So it's the same character. Like, so the first one introduces a character. The second piece, the interview, is like picks up later that same day with the character. But it's the same characters. It's just like the thing is, what I'm saying is it'll trace their lives, but it doesn't have, like, there's not any huge mystery involved at the moment or mm-hmm. whatever. And there, you know, eventually there will be maybe 80 of these stories or whatever that could be put together to be 120 pages long or whatever, you know, and suddenly it's almost a book. Mm-hmm. So we'll see. I'm gonna do this. People have been responding really well on my Facebook. People on Twitter and social media have responded really well.
I was thinking.
So we'll see. We will see. That's what's been going on with me right now. I don't know. This upcoming weekend, of course, I'm going to be doing my Divas Royale show again. And I'm going to be in Sacramento. I'm going to be in San Ramon on Friday doing a drag show there. The Divas Royale show is the impersonator show.
Oh, okay. Oh, that's right.
With Hunkamania and Divas Royale on Saturday. And then Sunday it'll be my show at the cafe. That's kind of my weekend in a nutshell with some writing in between. What is going on for you this weekend?
This weekend is my weekend off from drag. So I'm going to paint my room and my closet. And
you're painting your closet?
Yeah, I have a really big closet.
Oh, okay. I was like, okay.
I have a walk-in, a really big walk-in closet.
Girl, that's gorge.
Yeah, no, it's lovely. So I'm going to paint, and my birthday is the following week, so I kind of wanted to get most of my house done so I could say by my
birthday. Why are we not having a Chanel Rivera Pearl Tees birthday show this year?
Because you're having a Donkey Punch tour.
No, girl.
Weekend.
How about, first of all, no, I'm not. And that show got canceled, so.
Oh, no.
Girl, the Donkey Punch tour just fell apart.
What? I want the scoop. I want the scoop, girl. You might as well tell you already let it out the bag, girl.
I don't know if I can.
Yes, you can. Why not, girl? It's already here.
Dusty Moorhead was coming to San Francisco this weekend. And
had a whole tour.
Well, yeah, okay, so my perception of that tour might be a little bit different than what Dusty's perception of the tour was. I booked her at my show on Sunday, period.
Uh-huh.
I didn't book no Donkey Punch tour. I booked this chick from Brazil last weekend. That wasn't the fucking Brazilian Penga tour. Like, you know what I mean? It's like, I just booked a girl for a show.
Uh-huh.
It's a little different. Like, the Melissa B. Fierce and her daughters are coming just to San Francisco next month. There's going to be a whole show. It's going to be the Be Fierce show. That's a little more of a tour type of thing because they're coming as a package deal, whatever. Dusty was just coming as, I booked her. She's here in town. You want to do a show? Fine. Whatever. Just as if anybody else is coming. It wasn't a tour. So, but she had put in all this effort and I guess things started to unravel. I don't know. Things unraveled, whatever. I found out today that that she will not be here this weekend. Which seems so random because, girl, didn't you already buy a ticket? Like, wouldn't you have already bought your tickets to whatever? So she will not be here. So I'm beshrieked that I did not have a Pearl Tees and Chanel Rivera birthday show.
Damn.
I know. Well, I still got... Now that she's out, I got a couple spots open. If you whores want to jump in and have your birthday show, you're more than welcome.
Who else is performing that weekend? Not next weekend, but next weekend.
Next weekend?
Well, that's when it would be.
Let me check. I think that... Oh, next weekend is the first weekend of the month or whatever. Oh, maybe this is the first weekend of the month. First weekend of April is... I don't have anybody on my schedule. So,
I don't know.
If you guys want to have a birthday show, do you guys think that Pearl and Chanel should have a birthday show? That's what I thought. Obviously, you guys do.
Oh, I thought that was a no.
No, it was a... Of course you guys do. So, get it together. Maybe, I don't...
Talk to Chanel about it.
All right, we'll talk to Chanel. Anyway, so Pearl's going to paint her closet.
In my room.
And her room.
And I got my vanity lights. I'm going to put my vanity lights up, girl. My house is transforming with me.
Okay, this is something Pearl and I were talking about. I mentioned it earlier in the Shishi LaRue interview. And I'm going to say it to you now. I told Pearl I'm going to put this on the air, like on the record. I keep trying to like clean my house bit by bit.
Girl.
And it keeps falling apart. So,
By
next week, when Pearl walks in here, she will see a noticeable change.
And that does not mean
shifting stuff around.
Right.
Like, I'm going to work hard to make a noticeable change in my apartment. Which might mean that I have to do cleaning on Facebook Live, because when people are on Facebook Live, like, I feel motivated. Like, we cleaned my drag room one night, and there was like, more people watching me clean than have ever... They were routinely watching me do my makeup.
Maybe that's what I should do with the whole painting thing. Just Facebook Live it.
I don't know about that.
Right.
Like, that's like literally like watching paint dry. But In this case, like, I think there was a fascination because I was cleaning my drag desk in my drag room. And people were like... are always asking, like, what's those dresses, or da-da-da, and so, you know, like, I'm going through it, and they're like, what's that sparkly green thing? I'm like, that's this. Mm-hmm. But, you know, there's something to be said, like, I always tell my friends, like, I want you to come over and help me clean. That doesn't mean I actually want you to come and do anything. I just want you here so we can it's so different. Like, if we were recording this right now while, like, just gossiping or whatever, I would be cleaning the kitchen. You know, like, I don't mind doing housework when there's somebody else here to keep me company. But if I'm just by myself, I'll be like, whoo, girl, putting those dishes in the sink wore me out. I need a nap. You know? So by next Tuesday, when we record, I'm going to have done something in this house. It's going to be, I've got some things listed in my head that I want to make changes.
And she's also, should hopefully have a date for our fundraiser for you.
Yes.
Guys.
And I will have a date lined up for our
Lube wrestling! I'm so excited.
Our lube wrestling benefit. It's going to be at the San Francisco Eagle. Beth Bicoastal, in fact, emailed me. And Beth, if you're listening, I'm sorry. Shit is falling through the cracks. So
I'm going to go online this weekend and look for an outfit to referee in.
So we're gonna have information about that and much more when we come back. You guys, this has been episode 59 of Party Foul Radio.
Yes, it has.
We will see you guys next week with more. Oh, we'll talk to you next week with more. Until then, I'm Poet Omar.
And I'm Pearl Teeth.
Bye.
Bye.